You've spent a lot of years looking at amphibians on Wrangell Island and then in the surrounding waters, surrounding lands. And you have a paper that's going to be published soon. Give me a little bit more information about that paper.
Absolutely. So I'm really excited about this paper that's going to be published in the Northwestern Naturalist. I am the primary author, but I have two co-authors. One is David Zabriskie. He is the deputy refuge manager for Selawik National Wildlife Refuge. And then the third author is my old PhD advisor from UAF, Andres Lopez. He's a fisheries biologist as well as a geneticist and lecturer there in Fairbanks. The paper covers 7 years of data for amphibian surveys on the Stikine River starting in 2010. I finished my doctoral dissertation work in 2014 and published my dissertation in 2015. And the Alaska Herpetological Society decided to continue doing that work under what they've been calling the Stikine Long-Term Amphibian Monitoring Program. And so we've worked with local groups like the Girl Scouts and some of the high school AP bio classes, as well as with the Forest Service and others to utilize citizen scientists to collect data on what types of amphibians are out there, how many are there, what are some of the most important breeding locations for those animals, and how the populations are doing in the Stikine region here.
And then I understand that this research is building on some research from the 90s. Tell me what more you could add to that.
Sure. So there in 1991 and 1992, there were two different authors that visited the Stikine region and worked with the Forest Service to conduct amphibian surveys at really a great number of sites, probably more than I've visited in the Stikine region. But working with local people and with those authors, we were able to identify some of the primary breeding sites that they had visited. And using that information, we were able to determine whether or not those species are still present, whether they're still utilizing those breeding sites, and if the diversity of species has changed over time. And we did find that our data was largely consistent with what they had found, though we were able to, in some instances, update the information with new species that were present or to hypothesize on the invalidation of some of the records that were found. For instance, at Twin Lakes, there was a record of a northwestern salamander that there was no photograph of the animal, and the species has never been found since or before on either side of the international border. So we speculate that that animal could have been a misidentification.
And then go ahead and tell me more about the amphibians that you did confirm are still around.
Sure. So the Stikine region is actually known to be incredibly herpetologically diverse, at least relative to other areas of Alaska. Outside of Southeast Alaska, it's just the wood frog that occurs naturally throughout much of the state, even up onto the North Slope and through the Brooks Range. But here in Southeast, you have five native species, all of which we have found on the Stikine. That includes three frogs, the wood frog, the boreal toad, and the Columbia spotted frog. And it also includes two salamanders, one being the rough-skinned newt, which you have occurring pretty frequently even here on Wrangell Island, and then the long-toed salamander, which is a member of the ambystomatid family, the mole salamanders. They're a subterranean species that you need to roll rocks and logs in order to find them. A little harder to find unless you're looking for them, but we found those at several sites along the Stikine and particularly along the Delta. So those five species, five of the six that we think occur in Alaska, at least as native animals, were found. There are two additional species that we did not find with populations on the Stikine that have been introduced in Southeast Alaska, and those are the Pacific chorus frog and the red-legged frog. The Pacific chorus frog occurring near Ketchikan in the Ward Lake area, and the red-legged frog on Chichagof Island near Hoonah.
And what is the difference between a salamander and a newt?
So newts are actually a type of salamander. There's a couple of families that they occur in, but newts, at least in North America, tend to be toxic. So it's sort of not widely known that newts are salamanders, and it's not widely known either that toads are frogs, but they do have some differences. And the newt that you have here locally, I think most people probably have seen them. They have that orangish red stomach. We call it aposematic coloration. And it warns the predators that, you know, they could be dangerous.
And maybe real quick, give me a better sense of what areas you went to. Like you mentioned Twin Lakes, just any sites that you went to and maybe even sites that you really enjoyed going to.
Well, we had three main sampling areas, including Wrangell Island, Mitkoff Island, and the Stikine River. Here on Wrangell Island, some of the sites included Pat's Lake, the reservoir, Wrangell Reservoir, Tom's Lake, Earl West Cove, Middle Ridge Cabin. Even the Middle Ridge Cabin has a large population of newts occurring near it at that altitude. On Mitkoff Island, we spent quite a bit of time in the muskegs that occur right next to the baseball fields. Local knowledge suggested that several decades ago that landscape was crawling with Columbia spotted frogs, whereas we were unable to find many frogs in that area over the past 8 years. So maybe a little concerning. We're trying to figure out what's going on with that population. You know, we've sampled Blind Slough, the Sand Hill and Crane Lakes areas, as well as Ideal Cove on Mitkoff and some others. And then on the Stikine River, where we've probably spent the majority of our time sampling, we identified some key sites that have been apparently really important for amphibian breeding, including Shakes Hot Springs, the Twin Lakes area, and then a lot of sites on the Delta, including, you know, Farm Island, Dry Island, Sergioff Island, Mallard Slough, Chelipid Bay. All of those have really productive breeding populations. In fact, the Mallard Slough population of long-toed salamanders is one of the largest populations that I've seen. And those salamanders breed really early in the season after the snow melts and the ice breaks up. So intercepting them has been a challenge, but we were able to do that at an ideal time in 2012 and saw a lot of those animals there. I'd say that Mallard Slough's is one of my favorite because of those salamanders. I also am particularly fond of the Twin Lakes site. If I could, I would live at Twin Lakes. There's two frogs that I've seen frequently from year to year, and I can't be sure because I don't mark them on whether or not they're the same frogs, but I like to think that I am visiting them from time to time.
So local knowledge really impacted your research. Can you just tell me a little bit more about how you used your local communities to help you out?
I would say that the local knowledge was key to this study. Of course, the paper that I'm publishing is largely on the results of our active sampling efforts, but just identifying the sites where we should look for amphibians was done, you know, via talking to local people about what they've seen. We've had people submitting records themselves, just of photographs of what they've found over time, which have confirmed animals in areas that we didn't know they existed. And one example being a Columbia spotted frog that was photographed in a bucket full of toads from the Muskeg Meadows Golf Course. And so we've acquired a lot of information that way. I also did a mailed survey to every post office box in Wrangell a number of years ago. It had a dollar, I think, incentive in it. And so everybody was talking about the frog guy that was sending the money. But I got a lot of responses, and that survey was pretty in-depth about how people, what people know about frogs and salamanders on the landscape, but also how they feel about them and, you know, management and conservation of those species and, whether or not they think that they're integral parts of the ecosystem and, you know, parts of the local community as far as having a cultural value. And of course, you know, having more than one clan in the region that claims the frog as their major crest, you know, you would think that there would be a cultural significance here. And I did find that to be true. And I work closely with the Kiksati clan of the Stikine Tlingit over the years. And I really owe a lot to the members of that clan. They adopted me. I'm very appreciative of that and honored to have been adopted as Kitch Ituwu, frog feelings, or he who cares for the frogs. And I was adopted by the late Marge Bird. And I miss all the clan members that have since passed since I've worked with them. But they really helped me to understand the importance of having respect for animals on the landscape, but not just for those that we consume, but all of the other critters that people find near their homes.